What's up, everyone? Today's episode is a little preview of our Patreon exclusive episodes. If you want to hear the full episode, visit patreon.com/ontherecordmusic or click the link in the description of this episode below. So we're going to give you a little preview of what we talked about following up on our Beatles Revolver discussion from last week. And without further ado, let's rock and roll.
Yeah, definitely. And if you actually look at the expansion of Taxman in itself, it was going on with the other singers too, because what the one main thing that we kind of overlook with Taxman is that there are a couple spots in there that, you know, talk about Mr. Wilson, Mr. Heath.
Mr. Heath.
Oh, just such a great little piece. And So you look at what they're doing now, they're kind of like taking on societal figures.
Yeah.
And they're having more of a voice against the society, or, you know, reflection of society. That's kind of like exactly what we expected our comedians to do. And so, you know, it was for mockery and stuff. Well, the Beatles were marrying that together. So it's not just Taxman, but, you know, you look at And Your Bird Can Sing, which is a shot at Mick Jagger's girlfriend, Marianne Faithfull, who was also a singer and also released an album a couple months after Revolver got let out. But, you know, it's also making commentary about, you know, I guess For No One is kind of about a societal figure because Jane Asher was an actress at the time and it was about their breakup. So it's a little more lovey-dovey in that sense, but it's still about a person in society. And then also Eleanor Rigby actually is another version of a societal figure. It's this, you know, this haunting, lonely person. Well, it's about society as a whole. Like, we feel like we're kind of like locked in to some sort of loneliness that always gets there. And it, you know, it ended up being that Eleanor Rigby was a real person at one point, and it was, you know, the headstone was in the very grave place that Lennon McCartney met and played music for the first time. So it's kind of very creepy, but it actually does come to that. So yeah, I mean, that is a very big, you know, step in their lyrical expansion for sure.
Yeah, I love that story of Eleanor Rigby.
Yeah.
And the way Paul describes coming to this character, or the name of this character, and says he liked the name Eleanor because one of the actresses who played, I can't remember if it was Help or what movie it was.
Help, yep.
Her name was Eleanor, so he liked that and used that, and then was just searching for this last name, and apparently he saw a storefront of some store, and then there was, like, it was called Rigby's. And he's like, so I just went with the name Eleanor Rigby. He felt like it was strong and pronounced in the character. But then there's this odd coincidence of that tombstone in the neighborhood or the town where John grew up and where they met. And there's a Eleanor Rigby. And then not far from it is this Father McKenzie.
Yeah.
But the way Paul tells the story is that this Eleanor Rigby name was derived from those two scenarios, and then it just happens to be a coincidence. And how he claims, he's like, I don't know, it could be that it was in my subconscious from having seen this, so when I finally put together those names, it clicked. You know, he's not like, I saw it and got it from this gravestone, but he's also aware that of this coincidence, you know, and he kind of pokes fun at it because he's like, like, you know, it's this weird thing. And then the way they got McKenzie, because he was originally using McCartney, and then they didn't like that. And then they just opened up the phone book, according to Paul, and just went from McCartney, McKenzie. And then they're like, oh, yeah, that works. Let's use that. So weird coincidences that these two names just happen to be right next to each other or close by in this graveyard by where they met and hung out. And then supposedly these names are just randomly kind of made up.
I know, it's just so random when you think about that. So then look at that. So, you know, we're talking about Father McKenzie. They used a phone book, and the same thing with the blog post I recently posted up with, you know, the Beatles song That You Want to Know, which is about, you know, my name, look up the number. John Lennon basically saw that on the phone book too. And then we look at, like, the phone books are important in music history. Look at Coldplay. They wouldn't have never had Yellow. Can you imagine if they would have had Playboy as Chris Smith? Or who is that? Chris? I can't remember. What is Chris's last name from Coldplay? I forget. He's actually a nice dude, it seems like. But
Now I can't think of it.
Yeah, I know. I can't think of it. Anyway. Yeah, but anyway,
that's how big of a Coldplay fan I am.
Exactly. They're the
fine
stepchild of U2 almost, but a little bit better.
I don't hate Coldplay, but I don't love them either.
No, definitely not. But you know, it's like that. So they're finding influences right there. But another aspect about them expanding their lyrics is kind of taking a subject that is typically seen as bad or, you know, reserved. It's not really good to bring up in public, or you know, is taking a bad thing and turning it good. So one of them is obviously Rain. It when you listen to the single that actually should have actually fit in on Revolver if they didn't release it as a single, I think Rain would fit perfectly in this album. But as a single, it shows like a softer view of Rain and John Lennon's like kind of happiness for rainy days. Now that plays into his laziness a little bit, so that means he gets to sleep in and not have to do much. But
well, sure,
it's a happier side of Rain, and you never see Rain songs that really express that, you know. And then another song that kind of turns, you know, a typically, you know, kind of bad thing good is, you know, Paul McCartney's Got to Get You Into My Life. It shows the world a good side of pot and the, you know, the merry feelings it can bring someone when definitely used appropriately. So I really enjoy the lyrical expansion based off of those kind of like two topics that I see going through there. But definitely, I think going back to Taxman and Andrew Burke and Sing especially shows a really cool thing where you're no longer projecting the, you know, the pop world aspect of she loves you, I want to hold your hand, thank you, for girl, sure. P.S. I love you. So they got away from that type of thing. And really, when you look at their main influences during this time, Bob Dylan was the major influence on this. And you see it a little bit in Rubber Soul, especially with Norwegian Wood. Nowhere Man is especially great version of what we're talking about. But Bob Dylan, basically, lyrically, the growth of Dylan was a major influence on the Beatles. And, you know, this aspect of something bigger than you played a large part for the Beatles. So, you know, now they're just writing more character third and first person accounts that really, while the original pop songs could be relation just in verbiage, now there's actual meaning going into their songs where people can say, well, you're writing about yourself, or you're writing about yourself, but in a bigger aspect, or you're writing about these third person people in this deeper meaning. And that's the beauty, I think, of Revolver overall.
And that's the sweet spot for me personally. That's where I really connect with music, is when you get into that sweet spot of there's more to the song than just what you're hearing. And it's not a superficial topic. Not to say that love is superficial, because that can be fucking deep as hell. But love is very commonly written about, at least in modern music, modern music being from the 50s on, basically. With this movement into social issues, to me, like, I see so much potential and power in music to be a force for change for good and to do lots of good things. And I think when you get into that sweet spot of talking about these social issues, whether or not, like, you know, there's a whole nother conversation to be had about taxes and the tax man, but I just, to me, I love it when music starts to talk about things that are happening in real life, or writing that personal story and then making it more than just about you, writing that personal story in a way that others can relate to and connect with. That to me is like the sweet spot of music.
Oh, totally. If in one of the better examples of what you're speaking of, and we'll stick with the Beatles just because it's a very good example, is Hey Jude. You know, it's a song about John Lennon's son, who's a child going through divorce. And, you know, it's funny because ever since, you know, the mid 60s, you know, divorce has been on the rise in our society of, you know, the Western world. And so it's not only just a song that stood that time and stood in the late 60s, early 70s as a song that's, you know, number one hit. It literally actually confronts him, saying, hey, even though you're going through a tough time, you got everything you need on your shoulders, which is your head. Stay in your, you know, don't stay in your head, but use your head and move forward. And then you get this catchy little na 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 na, and it feels like, okay, everything is going to be all right, even though you're going through some shit. And that's, as what Gordon Ramsay would say, that's life now, isn't it? And so it's true.
So getting back to Taxman, I really like the lyrics. I want to dive into them just a little bit more, because the way George sings about this tax rate is actually really creative. So at the time, the highest tax rate was 95%. Now, I don't want to get into a discussion about how the progressive tax rate works. So when you're being taxed 95%, it's not like you're making $100 and they're taking 95 of it. It's a little more complicated than that. But that aside, I love how he sings about this in the opening mm-hmm. line. He says, "Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me." So mm-hmm. he's singing from the perspective of the tax man. And that becomes obvious when he says, "I'm the tax man." But that is that 95% rate. When you break it down, 19 of 20 is 95%. So 5% for you, 95% for me. And then in the next line, should 5% appear too small, be thankful I don't take it all. So again, referring back to that, here's the one of 20. So you have your 19 to 20 is your 95%. And then your one of 20 is that 5%. So it's delivered very creatively. I didn't realize that till I really read the lyrics. And I was like, and this was days ago, not, the first time I heard it years ago. And now I was like, holy shit, that's so creative. I never did the math on that.
It's really a scheme, basically. And that's, I can see why most Americans back in the 1700s threw tea in the Bay of Boston. It's with these type of numbers, it is kind of a robbery for what the Beatles have brought, especially when what George Harrison does say in the Beatles anthology, he's like, so here we are, semi-ambassadors to the British Kingdom, and they're basically robbing us without gunpoint. And he's like, it's not the wealth and the fame that you really think you're getting once you've reached mm-hmm. that pinnacle point, because literally, you look at what they were doing, they were big almost everywhere. I think everywhere that had any type of Billboard charts had them at number one, except for even Jamaica. Jamaica had Bob Marley and the Wailers beating out the Beatles in a lot of those instances.
Yeah, I totally understand that frustration, because I'm sure they felt a little used and a little exploited at that point, because they were working so hard and creating so much value almost exclusively on their own. Now, of course, that doesn't mean it was just the four of them. They had a team and there was lots of people helping them get to this level. But I think there was a lot of pressure put on them. And like you said, they're ambassadors in a way for the country. And then the country is like, by the way, you're going to give us all this money. Mm-hmm. And so that is where it becomes interesting, because I think they felt, like I said, they felt used, they felt taken advantage of in a way. And it's one thing to pay taxes. Like, I'm of the belief that taxes can be beneficial, but as an artist, that really sucks when you're creating all of that value yourself, and then a lot of it's not going back to you. I'm all for taxing corporations that profit off the exploitation of low-wage workers. Fuck them. Mm-hmm. They can be taxed all they want. Mm-hmm. But when you're creating the music and you're doing all the work, and then the government's like, no, we're going to take almost all of that from you, that is fucking infuriating.
It's thievery for sure, especially when you're your own entity and you have nothing to do with anything that's
yes.
corrupt in many. This is an artistic endeavor
exactly.
that people freely dive into, and guess what? I've bought many bad albums. I have. And guess what? I'm out of that
$20.
You're
going to at some point, right?
Exactly. And it's like, oh, shit, I didn't mean to buy this, Three Doors Down album. I sounded good at the time, Fuck.
If I go crazy, will you still call me Superman?
I mean, come on.
That was one of the first songs I learned on guitar.
Was it? Oh, wow.
Doon, doon, doon,
hey,
doon,
at least it
doon,
wasn't your doon, kryptonite doon, after
doon,
all.
Doon, 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 doon.
I'd anyway. Love to be able to see you able to pick the guitar up and just play that right now. That'd be hilarious.
I probably could. I can at least play that first part. I can't remember the chords after it, but that was a time. It was a time to be learning guitar, I suppose.
Yeah, I know.
So I really get that frustration, because by this point too, when they were writing Taxman, they were making a lot of money as individuals. Mm-hmm. And this is an estimated income of 1966. So this is when Taxman came out. So it would have been different in the years leading up to this. And this was okay. estimated by the website Inside Hook. And in 1966, they estimated that Ringo and George would have made about $2 million that year, which in today's dollars is $15 million, which is a lot. And then Paul and John were estimated to made about $3 million or $24 million, which is even more fucking money in today's dollars. Oof. So, when you're making that much money, And this website didn't elaborate. This was, I think this was all that before taxes. And at that tax rate, if they were in that 95% tax bracket, I don't know how it broke down, because the way it works is your first $10,000, and this is in US dollars, it would have been different because it would have been the British pound, but your first $10,000 is taxed at X percent. And that's true whether you make $10 million or whether you make $30,000. Your first $10,000 is taxed at this percent, and then the next bracket is 10 to 50,000, and then you get taxed, you know, so it works like that. And then once you get past a certain level, at that point, that highest level was 95%. So if you made over $1 million, let's say, for example, that $1 million to $2 million, so that second $1 million, they would have taken 95% of that. So yeah, that is kind of angry. So if you're making $2 million and then your effective tax rate equals out to maybe being 50 or 60%, you're only taking home a half of that, or even less than $1 million. So yeah, I'd be pretty fucking pissed too.
Yeah. And you look at the history of the Beatles, it feels like they've gotten ransacked quite a bit, including merchandising was a huge thing back in the early 60s. And not to mention when they were first starting out, before I Want to Hold Your Hand hit it big in the United States, they were shipping out all of their singles, so that when they were when they had the top five spots on the Billboard charts, it's because they had about four different record companies releasing five hits, you know? So it's one of those things where it's like, oh, okay, so it's not all Capitol Records. It's actually, it's, you know, it's Loopies and it's Ringers and it's Dragers and, you know, it's like all these different labels. So the Beatles, especially with their songwriting catalog, which will probably be another episode later down the line, they really did have some bad deals. And, you know, taxes is just a general bad thing for everybody, but it's also when you're getting in that progressive thing where it's like, damn, why are we getting 95%? It feels like you're getting screwed. And you know, when they started off with like the Apple Store and the Apple recording, things like that, I know that they were trying to get a hold of their song catalog and trying to make sure that some of these problems could be rectified and stuff like that. So I don't know if that played a part also in like some business taxes that they could have gotten where they cleared it up, but I think it was better somehow in the back half of the 60s or the 70s. I know Lennon got better monetary value when him and Yoko teamed up. His side was cleared up pretty well, but the other Beatles, I'm not sure.
Yeah, things did get better, and that was a big reason why they started Apple, their company. And that was part of manager Brian Epstein's plan to create a more tax-effective business structure, because corporate taxes, and this is true to this day here in the United States, and I'm presuming over in England as well, the laws are different, how corporations are taxed versus individuals. And so part of that plan was to use this company, which changed the tax brackets and all the different ways taxes work, and it made it more tax effective. So I think in the back half of the 60s, especially, they were getting more of that money back. But basically, when early on in their career, before they were established as a business, they're essentially independent contractors. And so you're paying essentially double the tax. And obviously that's way oversimplified. I don't, you know, and I don't know 60s English tax laws and code. Surprisingly, I don't know if that comes as a shock to you. I'm not up on that another country's tax code from 60 years ago. And that wraps up this week's Patreon exclusive preview. Hope you like that little teasy tease of an episode. If you want to hear the full thing, visit patreon.com/ontherecordmusic, or just open your podcast app right now and look in the notes of this episode, the show description, and there's a link right to Patreon there. You don't even have to type it in. You're fucking welcome. We really appreciate your support. And when you join us on Patreon, you can have access to all the episodes like this when they come out for just $5 a month. That's patreon.com, or click the link in your show description in your podcast player right now. Until then, keep fucking rocking.